trying to maximize solar radiation efficiency. Okay. Now, this time I want to go a little more into detail on the yield data we have, and I think we have time to do that, I think. The primary objective of the solar corridor is to make more efficient use of solar radiation and its role as a photochemical energy catalyst that drives the capture of more CO2 in quantities that enables a sustainable production of more corn and hopefully more net operating profit per acre. And that should occur because, you know, sunlight and carbon dioxide, which are two of our major components that increase the yield, are not real expensive. You know, they're relatively inexpensive compared to others, and they're sustainable. And the sustainable sequestration of more carbon per corn acre, which enables a reduction of, which can, done in a way that would enable a reduction of soil erosion, compaction, post-harvest nutrient loss, et cetera, from each corn acre. And that's what we've been talking about before, is on depends on what crops we put on the solar corridor floor to do that. And I don't need to go through that again on that. But what we need here, what I'm seeing in this room here, is that there are some people in this room that know things that I don't know about this that could make this thing really work and put it all together. And so that's when I came back to Missouri, I went somewhere to get some collaboration with other people. I say I'm an interdisciplinary corn production agronomist. That's all I know about trying to put the and synergy is what interdisciplinary people do, try to get synergy between the inputs, and so we actually increase our production, and that's where I've got that math problem there. It wasn't that I don't know math, but that's what we can get with synergy. We can get more of the output than we put in it. And now, I'd like for any time you have any question on anything I'm going to put up here, now's the time to have, because we do have the speaker behind me, following me, is not going to be here, so we've got some more time on this. So there's a couple of things. Is I'm not the best communicator, but if you ask questions, maybe I can cover some of the things that I would have obviously left out. But this is our whole, the concept is, you know, that we are changing the canopy, the architecture in the plant, in the field. We're changing the microclimate in the field that we think, and we're going to see in what we do with that. And the, we said cowpeas or different crops, you know, I don't know what. That's to be determined. That's what the synergy here will determine, what crops we actually use and what the farms are, what the particular site is. But I'd like to spend a little more time on the next component of this. That's the yield component here. Now, I have said I spent an awful lot of work on screening the hybrids because I noticed a terrific difference in hybrids and how they respond to the system. Out of the 21 hybrids originally that I screened, out of the 200 that originally screened, the 21 of them that met our screening criteria for flex, the 21 of them that met that, in my trials I knew I couldn't use all 21 of them, but so I tried to select, I selected one of the hybrids that increased number of kernels on the ear. This DeKalb 777, I think. It had a long ear. Some of you might know it had a long ear, and it would oftentimes abort kernels on the end because it couldn't fill them. Well, in this particular case, we were able to fill every one of those kernels. It never had a cob sticking out of the end. So that was what hybrid B was, a hybrid that we thought we could increase yield by increasing kernel number. Hybrid C was a totally different cat. We increased yield in that by increasing the kernel weight and the kernel density of the kernels. And hybrid D, we increased yield by simply just adding more ears per plant. ears per plant. So those are the so that's why I picked three agronomic characteristics that I thought in the, from the screening trials would contribute to extra yield if it worked. And then we split the plot first by hybrid, and then we split that, and we'll spend more time on this now, as a plant population. Then we split that by plant population, and as you know, in the treatment, the row entries, we had two entries row. The control was 30-inch rows or 36-inch rows, state of the art, using everything the farmer knew to produce yields. That way we were 200 bushel yield levels at that time. And then our treatment was, ever either one of those rows are missing, and the missing row is moved over to make a twin row of that. So, and I say this is where this work was done at 40 to 41 degrees north latitude, and I used north south rows because I want all the sites to be the same, and I'm not sure that north south rows are better than east west rows. I'm not sure. The hybrid selection, the pre-hybrid screening trials indicated that some hybrids would probably do best in east-west rows, some would probably do best in north-south rows, but most of the predominant number of those would prefer the north-south rows. So that's why this study was done this way. And here, this was, we had everything. Oh, correction. Okay. Did I tell you? The plant populations we had was what we thought was state-of-the-art population of the farmers sites we were looking at that time, were 30,000 plants per acre. And then we, in our screening trials, we actually had half that. Was our screening trials were half that, because we just took out every other corn row and the single rows. So I thought in our advanced studies we should have that same population in case, so we had one half X is the state-of-the-art population, two-thirds X, and 5/6 X population. That's what we had. So obviously in here there are probably some populations that are not conducive to optimum yield for those. But anyway, that's so as it key here is that one of those hybrids did not like the solar quarter, the other three do. In that environment, and then at the high where we took out the four lowest yielding sites, that didn't change the effect that one hybrid didn't like the solar quarter, the other three did. And then, but here's where I'm going to spend a little more time on this one, is after we get what would we use just the optimum population. Now, with the four hybrids we had, so this trial was to see what can we do at optimum population. But those four hybrids we had, they differed on what an optimum population was. So we used the highest population. So this is the 30,000 plant population. That's the yield level we had. And that had the same results where we had, one hybrid doesn't like it. That's all there is to it. And that represents about 90% of the hybrids. But as long as we have some that work, and we don't have a lot of people using this system yet, we do have enough hybrids for them. But that's something I think if we can develop hybrids to fit this system. Now, my hypothesis says hybrid B, C, and D do have a chloroplast that has an extended period of productivity, whereas hybrid A probably doesn't. And hybrid B, C, and D should have a reproductive sink that's able to use more of the photosynthates that are produced. So if you have those two, if we develop hybrids on those two criterions, a chloroplast that will work longer and have a reproductive sink that uses those photosynthates, we would have a totally different yield structure, I bet, on this, or increase that. So, and I'd say it would be an improvement. Now, we were taking a look at the response trend to population, of course, that hybrid B was kind of a typical example of three of the hybrids that they did respond, and they did like the highest box, the 30,000 plants, and I would indicate maybe 30,000 wasn't quite their optimum, but that's what we had in the studies. But then here's the one that has got me kind of excited, is that hybrid D, it didn't make any difference what population was added. Produced 200 bushel corn at any population from 1/2 x population, which is 15,000 plants per acre, up to its up the 30,000 plants. And we think that this means to me that there are a lot of options out there that we need to synchronize and in this system. That means we haven't developed this system to where, you know, we don't know exactly where it should be across the system wide. But if we know the hybrid, we can develop that system pretty well if we know the hybrid. And as I said, when I started this work, I had been on an agronomist on a corn breeding team, and these results, hybrid results, were predictable from the male and female parents we had in them. But now I don't know what the male and female parents are, and I don't know, you know, and we don't have that same kind of capability anymore. I should say that the seminal work yield data I'm presenting here isn't real. It's old. It's old work. It's done a long time. These hybrids were all developed during the 1980s. These hybrids were developed in the 1980s or early 90s. And the studies we conducted were all through the 90s until those hybrids ran out. But we got good data on those hybrids we have. But hybrid seed companies are a little different in how they do things, I guess. But then, another question about my data. Some have said, well, what do you mean you're combining, you're using multiple sites, and you don't distinguish between 30-inch rows or 36-inch rows? No, I don't distinguish. Here's the reason I don't is, it didn't make any difference. We got the studies I did on them and said that we got about the same results as 30-inch rows or 36-inch rows. They responded about the same. If the farmer's using 36-inch rows, well, that's what it's. It's used. If he's using 30-inch rows, that's what it's used. And I used hybrid C was an example I used here. Of course, it's fairly typical. Is there really wasn't any difference? You got the same results whether you're wide 72 or 60-inch rows. Any question at this point here on this thing?
So just to let the audience know, our next speaker has canceled out. So Leroy's going to continue on a little bit more. If you need to get to another, or if you came to see that next speaker, just to let you know.
Okay. That's right, yeah. I might not be as good looking as he is. I probably don't know as much as he does about anything. But here was another study we did on, well, someone said, well, ethanol was what can we do in production of anhydrous ethanol per acre yield? And so we measured the yield of the floor crop. We took the floor crop, and the floor crop was on every other corn row, and that floor crop was peas. The peas were because peas are finished, they finished their production before the corn plant starts shading them. And here's the yield we had up here, corn crop bushels per acre, as I've reported them, was without accounting anything for the other crop. Whereas here, when we harvest the crop of peas, we effectively found, we decide, well, you know, we're actually only, we actually can attribute half of that land area to the peas, which we will do when the system develops. It'll be a half and half. We know that we can produce a crop, not the crop the way we want to raise, but we can produce a crop in between the corn row without impacting corn yield in a negative way. And so we found, well, you know, we could produce 1,000 gallons per acre of ethanol, per corn acre, of ethanol from each of those hybrids. But I would say that what I wanted the solar corridor to do was simply to enable today's corn producer to utilize the incredible power of solar radiation to increase yields per corn acre in phase one. And phase two is when they use the crop, the other crop in between the corn rows. And the properly designed solar corridor crop system alters the canopy architecture enough to enable every potentially productive chloroplast to have full access to the photochemical energy catalyst that increases corn yield, solar radiation. Now, all hybrids do not like this, but those that do, well, let's use them. I mean, those that do. Full access to solar radiation is not obtained if chloroplasts reside under several layers of row-to-row overlapping leaves. And this system removes that potential yield-limiting factor. And we must recognize that some varieties are more responsive to removal of that limiting factor than others are. And the solar corridor crop system protocol identifies those varieties. The first thing that has to be done is we have to go out and have some simple preliminary screening trials to see what the flex is, if they have all the light they need. And our screening trial was that if it produced 95% of itself, with every other row missing, or at half the plant population, if it produced 95% as much as it did at full population and controls, we thought that hybrid should have consideration to put in advanced trials. And also, if there's other hybrids in the trial, it had to yield 85% of the highest yielding hybrid in the trial of that maturity rate. So those were the criteria we used in our screening trials. And if they met those criteria, well, then let's go ahead and work with those further. And that's what we did. That's how we got those hybrid B, C, and D did that, met that criteria. Hybrid A did not. Reference we have is one awful good reference here is Table 2 of Nelson in Agronomy Journal 106.5. And Kelly Nelson told me that he said, well, that might have worked in Illinois where you were doing this work. But he said, I don't know if that would work here. So I said, okay, well, here's the protocol. Why don't you test it? And you look at his yield table, and he got the same results on one of the hybrids he had. And we didn't do a lot of effort selecting the hybrids, but at least we're fortunate in that one of the hybrids did produce exactly the same amount of corn in 60-inch twin rows as it did in 30-inch controls. So that's one of the references there. So I was really kind of pleased that at least someone beside myself had tested this hypothesis, and because if I was the only one that had done this, then you're subject to some concern of that, but I'm so glad he did that found that. And then the patent, the U.S. Patent Office did validate this, and those are two references there. And the patent office is, the patent is a planning arrangement to improve crop yield. So anyway, that's kind of my overview presentation, and hope that gives the basis for some questions here for whatever people have. Yes.
Yeah, I have two questions.
If they're simple, I can answer them, and if they're hard, I'll see if he can answer them. Okay.
If they're easy, please, easy questions.
Oh, good. Okay.
The first one is, what is the distance between the double row in your 60-inch double row? What is the distance between the two closed rows?
Okay. Our twin row planter that we had was 7.5 inches. between the two twin rails. But we only had one twin rail planter for one of the sites.
Okay.
And I had a dozen sites. So those other 11 sites, our goal was to get plant, to double plant, to come back and double plant. We planted once and came back and double planted. And to get, be within 6 to 8 inches. And the second year, they all met that. The first year is a little bit harder. They couldn't use the first time. But my thing is, from after the growers were able to raise, keep everything at 6 to 8 inches, that's the width. Now, before that, I'd seen a twin row study with rows at 5.5 inches apart, and I thought it looked to me like they were a little bit too close together. But there's some point in there that someone could maybe improve, but a minor 6 to 8 inches. And I found that anything wider than 8 inches is hard to get through the cord head. I thought there was, but in other words, I had one twin row birch planter. The rows were 10 inches apart, and then the twin row, and those were a little too wide for the corn to do it together. In my opinion.
The second question is, what you call it is the way you plant corn and some other crops.
Corn and some other crops, yeah.
Yeah, and I think it's a very interesting idea, but the logistics of if you're planting at that scale, how do you harvest the peas?
How do you harvest the peas?
Yeah.
Look, I'm a corn production agronomist. I had an FFA class that helped me harvest the peas. Harvest them by hand. I mean, these were small plots. Thank God they were small plots. But when we got to the second and third replication, they didn't want to harvest the peas either. But, I don't know the answer to that. But now, could you hog down those peas? Could you hog down the peas? But anyway, Bob, you want to get it?
Well, we were working with the county, and if you have the right variety, it's going to mature about the same time, a little bit later than the corn. We have the corn harvest first. Harvest that first. Be very careful. You can miss the peas. And then you can come back in and harvest the peas. That worked for that particular peas.
Yeah, I think it can be that.
I don't know. It opens up a whole new area of things to do. But yes, I'm thinking that our land resource, our arable land, is our most finite resource. And I'm trying to get the most, if I can get the most productivity out of that finite resource, I think we can figure out the rest of how to harvest it. But I wish you hadn't asked me that question, because we didn't do a very good job harvesting the peas. But the purpose of the peas in that particular trial was to see if there was any impact on corn yield, and had no impact on corn yield. That's what it was. But so we didn't get. So I'm not reporting pea yield because only got they quit after two replication harvests. It's been a very interesting project, and I hope that this gentleman's answer can be answered in a proactive way, interested in seeing farmers start using this. But we have work to do to get it done. But if enough of you see this and you all can figure things out that I haven't been able to figure out. That's why when I went to the University of Missouri with this, Tim Reinbach said, well, do you need those rows? How many solar quarters do you need in the field? Well, I don't know. I mean, you have a choice of what you can do with that. So that's why some of the slides we saw, that he had several different corn rows, and that's why now he's going to harvest every row singly to see what the effect is at each row you get away from the quarter, if maybe we don't have to have this quarter every time. But mine, I was trying to get maximum productivity out of that. So any other? I appreciate you setting through this. I hope it gives you some food for thought. It gave me some food for thought. It's so funny. The first time we did this, these farmers of mine, I said, 29 of my clients said, okay, we'll try to support this, try to work with this. And that. The first year, we got, the first year yield results we got was, they said, well, this must be due to a drought year. It worked in a drought year. The first year we had a bad drought year. And we got the same amount of corn, or a little bit more corn on the wide rows. We did singles. We couldn't believe it. So we said, okay. So hopefully we'll have a good year next year. And sure enough, we did have a good year next year. The yields were quite, you know, 200, over 200 bushel yields. Got the same results. We could produce as much corn or more corn in the twin rows, 65. And they said, oh, it must be due to these small flocks. You see, I hand thinned everything, so our population grew. They said, it must be these small flocks. Maybe we're small flocks. So then they started, when I was doing this work, doing the research, they also were doing, they built, they said, well, we'll do this on a field scale. And one of them got 40 acres of flocks where he's looking at different combinations of this and different hybrids and different populations. Then they figured out, well, it wasn't due to the drought, and it wasn't due to the small plots. It worked in actual field operation. They were able to get the same amount of corn in 60-inch wide twin rows where they were in the control with these hybrids. So it's kind of fun. But most everything I'd read has said, well, surely you'll have a yield loss if you make wider rows like that. Surely you would, but depends on hybrids. That's what happened.